Hey, and thanks for listening. This is Conversations, the True Voice Media podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Gibbard. Let's get started. This is Conversations, the True Voice Media podcast. We're on episode number 25, and today, that means we can legally rent a car. Today, we're talking with a phenomenal gentleman named Ramon De Leon, who is also known by the hashtag Ramon Wow, because he has a propensity to wow people. And I don't just mean customers in his world. I'm talking about people he meets on the street, and I'm talking about anybody that has ever come in contact with him. So I'm really thrilled to have Ramon on the show today. Ramon, thank you for joining us. Please tell all the people a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you're doing, maybe a quick history where they might know you from, as opposed to what you're doing now. Just give people the story. Who are you?
No, absolutely. You know, for 27 years, I was part of Domino's Pizza here in Chicago, where I was I had a 6-store Domino's Pizza franchise that I was running. And what's really cool about that story, you know, first of all, there's few that could still say, hey, you know what, I've been at the job for 20 years, but let alone Domino's Pizza in a pizza town like Chicago. I started as a pizza delivery driver and literally, you know, delivered my way to the top. And how I did that was every part of my career, I focused on how could I create experiences, not transactions, so that customers can get to know me, like me, and trust me so they could buy from me. It didn't matter if I was the pizza driver coming up to your door, you know, because I wanted you to order again. And it didn't matter if I was the manager of a store because I wanted you to order again, or if I was in charge of a region because I wanted you to order again. And what I do now is I build upon that experience to share the stories and share the insights on how I use the tools of social media before it was even called social, to connect and engage my customers and really just let them get to know the face behind the logo. And through the comments, through the tweets, and through every form of communication, let the customers really know where your heart and where your mind is, and it's right with them.
So you just said that kind of the classic get them to know, like, and trust you, because that's who people Absolutely. Tend to do business with. But you're talking about that before that became sort of the pervasive notion throughout social media. I mean, we talk about that a lot, you know, from everybody from Scott Stratton to Chris Brogan to, you know, everybody any of the names you've ever heard has this know, like, and trust thing. Mm-hmm. But you've been walking that walk since before you were in social media, before there was a Twitter. You were doing that back in the day where you were pizza delivery guy. Yeah. Where did you kind of – how did that – become your sort of philosophy? How did you get to be this way about the experiences versus the transaction? Like what inspired you to be that way? I mean, even as, because a lot of people could be a pizza delivery driver and just be like, meh, it's just a job, it's just whatever. But you took it to such a level where you were able to actually turn that into something so much bigger. And as we'll talk about a little bit more, some of the things that you've actually done, which are just will be shocking to some people, I think. How did you start as a pizza delivery guy and have that sort of overwhelming sense of purpose?
It all comes from home, what I learned from my parents. Now, in 1974, there was the 7-year-old kid who used to tag along with mom as she sold Avon. Now, just imagine, we're going back to the 70s here. 7-year-old kid with mom, door to door, visiting friends, visiting neighbors, selling Avon. So think of the tools that you have at your disposal other than the Avon catalog and your word. So what I never understood is when we would go over to someone's house, why my mom would spend 20 or 25 minutes talking to her friends or potential customers about absolutely everything except what we were here for, the cosmetics and Avon book. Back then, just think, 7-year-old kid, all of these technologies that have not been invented, 4 or 5 channels on the TV, and I'm in the living room, bored out of my skull. I probably had a coloring book, or who knows what I had, but all I knew is that I was bored. The last 5 minutes that we were there, she would drop off, she would pull out the Avon book, write down her phone number with a call to action, please call me, and then write down the date of when the offers were the orders needed to be placed by. And then she'd pull out another book and she'd say, I'm going to give you a second book in case you have a friend, a neighbor that you would like to share this with. So when we would leave, I would ask her, Mom, wouldn't it be faster if maybe I just like rang the doorbell, gave the book, put it into a mailbox, put it in between the doors. I don't know. I was just thinking, instead of doing 2 houses an hour, if I did it this way, maybe we can do 10 houses an hour or 20 houses an hour. And she would always tell me, she says, son, I am not the only person selling Avon in this neighborhood. I need people to get to know me, like me, and trust me so that they can buy from me and not someone else. So it doesn't matter if it's 1974 or 2014, that tidbit of advice worked then and it worked now. So later, as I myself start working, even in jobs before Domino's, I always put that tactic to work. Because especially, you know, you're in a tipped business. Doesn't matter if you're a waiter, doesn't matter if you're, the pizza driver, you need to have repeat business so that you could potentially get repeat tips. Can you imagine today at a bar, a waiter or a waitress only serving somebody a drink one time? And people went there with the mindset saying, you know what, I'm going to get trashed today. But because I don't like that bartender, I'm going someplace else. So the thing is that when I would see how she would engage with customers, and she was creating experiences, not transactions, that's where the learning came from. You know, the MBA of customer service came from mom.
That's awesome. That's so awesome. I mean, and what's cool is for some of the people that may be listening to this podcast and don't actually know how you say these things, and like it feels good, but I think some people out there may not even know, like, you're not just saying these things. Some of the stories that are out there on the web, you know, I know some of the stories from having you heard speak a couple times when we've been kind of on the speaker circuit together, mm-hmm. and they've been awesome. But I've also done a little bit of my own homework and looked into some of the stories that are out there about you, and they're mind blowing. So the one I came across recently was Amy Corin and the video apology that went viral. 87,000 at the time that the article that I was reading had been written about it. The Domino's store that you were managing was an hour late. She went to Twitter, starts freaking out, and you send her a video apology that arrives in her Twitter inbox the next morning. Yep. And she proceeds as you may or may not have even known that she was an influential person on Twitter. She posts this out, writes a blog post about it, and it goes completely viral. And the crazy thing is, one of the things that I wanted to bring up about this is that to fix that one mistake, what I read was that you sent 350 pizzas to Social Media Club that at the time you didn't even know she was a part of. So yeah. The response there when I read that was almost so overwhelmingly over the top that you're really walking the walk. My question is, when you think about how to create these experiences, you could just say, I'm sorry, and send them a coupon. You could just say, I'm sorry, here's a free pizza next time you order. What is it about you? I mean, there's no like and trust. And then there's creating this sort of a thing where you are creating something that people would share 87,000 times. And this article is in 2010. I'm sure it's even more by this point. How do you think this is the appropriate response, is to go so completely overboard? Like, what is that inside of you? How can other people possibly access that? Because it's obviously worked out for you.
Right. So what happened is that actually happened in April of 2009. And the issue had already been solved at store level, meaning she had called the store. The store, you know, sent her another pizza, gave her, canceled that credit card transaction, so she didn't have to pay for that order, plus gave her a voucher for a future order. So as far as the customer service experience cycle, it's a closed deal. There's nothing else to follow up. We made her happy. But because she vented on social, I said, okay, wait a minute. The world is going to think that Domino's or myself, we don't care. Here's this customer who had a bad experience, and the brand's gone silent. So when I saw that, and even though we took care of it, I could have easily just sent a tweet or a message and say, no, I'm glad we were able to resolve the issue, and we hope to gain your trust in a future order. I would have said hope. And the thing is that I believe that sometimes the word hope, although I believe in prayer, I believe the word hope needs to be removed from our business plan, because we need to make things happen. So when she did that, I thought, how about if we as a team, we get together and we make an apology for her so she could see the sincerity of how much it bothered us that we really messed up her night. Because the thing is, we launched the online ordering platform here in Chicago in 97, 98, 7 years before Domino's Corporate. And the order error came in via the web. So this was really personal here. And I really wanted her to know and feel that sentiment, and other than words, the fact that we really cared and we were sorry. So we went back and forth trying to meet and figure out the way to almost symbolically, you know, deliver the pizza that was made in error and that caused this huge delay. So I saw a couple of things bubbling here. I said, one, my competitors right now are doing little to nothing with regards to social because they're scared. It's 2009. Just imagine the fear brands have today. It's multiplied if you go back 5 years ago. But then I thought, we need to either invent this game of social and digital and customer service of how we're going to handle things, or we need to change the rules. And what I wanted to do was set the bar so high with regards to social customer service and customer service in general with my Domino's pizza stores. There's 1,200 pizzerias in the greater Chicagoland area, and she chose to order from me tonight. That's big. So seeing this, I said, one, we're going to make this video so that she could see the sincerity behind it, so that the competitors and the world can see of what we're willing to do to make our customers happy. And the stars were right. The moon aligned. Later, I find out she's part of Social Media Club Chicago, which hadn't been around 6 months, you know, 6 or 8 months. So sometimes people say, oh, is that you knew Social Media Club Chicago? How many businesses or startups or apps have started 6 or 8 months ago that you have really wanted to put your heart into and say, hey, I'm going to go full blown and invest in this?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Philly, a lot of people don't even know about Social Media Club Philadelphia. And we probably started ours around the same time as Social Media Club Chicago. Yeah. And there's a lot of businesses and people that have absolutely no idea we exist.
Exactly. So then I saw that. I just saw a lot of conversation, and then that was the platform. I said, here is where we are going to wow Amy in person. So we did our homework with her. You know, we catered the event. It was actually for 350 people, not 350 pizzas.
Got it.
But still, that's a lot of pizza.
Yeah.
And so then, not only that, but we created so much content around it. I'm going to send you the link to the video of us making her pizza and actually delivering it. And then the manager doing his homework, figuring out that like purple or lavender was her favorite color, and went and got these roses, that a bouquet made in the same order. And we totally blew her mind. Because
You're blowing my mind right now. Yeah. Are you serious? You went down to the favorite color and flowers.
Yes.
That's
yes.
I'm gonna next send you level.
So just think of this. Now we're making a video of the making of this big moment. Because what I really wanted to further happen was not only, you know, just making a total difference in her life, but I wanted my competitors to see. And I wanted them to be thinking when they would look at this and say, wow, look what this guy's willing to do for his customers. And in the back of their mind, I want them to be thinking, we better, you know, up our game with customer service, or this is what he's going to do for our customers. Because even before social and digital, when I was a rookie manager in 1990, I had this campaign that was called Pizza Insurance. And Pizza Insurance was basically, it was a coupon I would send on top of the pizza box that said, if you ever order from any of my competitors and they fail you and they give you substandard service or product, please call me. I will make it up to you.
That is so awesome.
Yes, pizza insurance. So the thing is, I was just taking what I had done before 1990 as a rookie manager. See, because that's the best time to steal customers, when they're totally irate with the brand that they thought they loved. And so in the pizza business, I was and people would call. I would get one or two calls a week. You know, and sometimes I get some calls, just, you know, people wondering about it. And I would say, sure. Oh my, you tell me what happened. How long? Oh my God, I can't believe that they did that to you. This and the other thing. No problem. Next time you have a pizza need, you know, here's my pager number. reach out to me and I will make you smile. And so I said, I figured this is what we're going to do with social and digital.
You know what's really cool about that? Because so I have so many thoughts swirling right now, but the one that's really hitting me is that, one, when you said you wanted to wow this customer so much that your competitors would look at and say, we need to step our game up, or they're going to do that for our customers, to a certain extent, even if you don't get that customer from your competitor, you're making a better experience for that customer by making them step up their game. And I just think that that is such an amazing thing to think that – even if you don't benefit, you're still committed to the customer benefiting. But still, if they're not going to step up their game, you've got things like pizza insurance that you were thinking, if you don't step up your game, I'm happy to take your customer, and here's how I'm going to do it. So it's like you're hitting it from both angles where you're saying it's not just, you know, I'm going to steal the customer and make their experience better, but I'm also going to push my competitors to step up their game. And one of the things I've always said about social business is I believe that the more businesses that become social, the better experience it becomes across all industries for customers, for employees, and for the world in general. So I feel like there's a lot of social mission there to providing that better customer experience because it steps up the game for everyone.
Absolutely.
So another thing that kind of crossed my mind as you're talking about this, I mean, we're talking about pizza, right? So pizza is kind of a very relatable thing. It's a very down-to-earth thing. Anybody could get down with the pizza conversation. I work with a lot of highly regulated industries, talking people in finance, people in law, people in healthcare, and there's all of these situations where saying the wrong thing could lead to 6 or 7 figure fines, depending upon which industry we're talking about here. But the things that you're talking about, these experiences that you're creating, can these sort of experiences be created in these environments where there are such regulations? Does it just require more forethought? I mean, have you looked at how to advise clients or people in other industries on how to do this and how to provide that wow experience, the know, like, and trust in something that could potentially result in liability if they do it wrong?
Oh, absolutely. You know, when Domino's Pizza went public, I don't remember the year, and now they're being, you know, on the stock exchange. I had to be pretty careful with what I was talking about, you know, on stage. I had to really be, you know, cautious, not only what I was sharing in real time with regards to the store. So, you know, I wasn't as regulated as pharma and finance, but I still had that cloud where I was, you know, had my eye on it to make sure that I didn't accidentally slip up and say, oh, I can't wait till we launch this Super Bowl promo because it's going to, you know, I had to be careful of that. So, but how could some of this stuff, you know, relate into some of the most highly regulated industries out there? And one of the things that I love to look at is what Morningstar is doing. You know, Morningstar, you know, financial advisors, presence globally, all over the world. And when I see how what they focus on is the experience that someone has when they are contacting you. It could be something as simple as, does my content render on their device? Is the information that they want accessible on my website? Is what I am talking about relevant and timely? So the whole thing is that no matter what the industry is, if you are already answering questions, if you are already engaging with customers face to face, it's just a matter of being relevant within the rules. And when you do that and you totally focus on what's it like for them contacting me, just think of something like Morningstar. These guys are trading literally, you know, instead of maybe not 24/7, 24/5 around the world, markets all over the world and in different languages. But they've been able to figure it out to the extent where when you talk to them, they always say, as a brand, build upon your Super Bowl moments. No matter how the world talks about Oriole and all this real-time marketing that happens, every industry has their big game day. In the pizza business, it was not only the Super Bowl, but it's New Year's Eve, it's Halloween. It's these big moments where you can let the world know just how awesome you really are and what differentiates you in the game of business. So with Morningstar, with them, it's this conference an annual conference that they put on here in Chicago, and they build upon the experiences now, connecting with people online, connecting with people in digital, and now when they have a face-to-face global conference, that you just totally blow it out of the water. But the thing is, so many brands today, are just too concerned with what you can't do and not focusing enough on what you could do.
Yeah. So tying together the way that you approach that situation with Amy and thinking about something like, I don't know, a financial advisor or a bank, to me it seems like what you did was you did your homework on her. You found out where you could provide value to her, and you went over the top to make sure that she was not only provided with what was expected or what would make the situation right, but what would actually make it extraordinary and wow her. And I'm thinking, if somebody goes on Twitter or on Facebook and they're venting about their financial advisor or about their bank, that bank could very well do a similar thing where they make a video of them in the meeting reading about it and talking about it and figuring out, not necessarily naming names or anything like that, but talking about how they're going to fix this, how they're going to create the right response to it, doing their homework on that person and creating a video about how they rectified that problem, how they're listening. And I'm thinking about in a world of finance where a lot of organizations are trepidatious to even step their foot in even a little bit, that sort of thing would be so over the top that I think that it could kind of break ground and make new things possible. I don't know. It's just kind of what you inspired from that story about the how you dealt with Amy.
Absolutely. So, you know, another thing I think about is when I think of banks, and people are always asking me, you know, banks and financial other examples that I always turn to is what they're doing in Australia with the NAB. I believe it's a National Australian Bank. So they have to their favor that they actually have brick and mortar locations. But the thing is that they have some flagship locations in Sydney and in Melbourne that you almost don't want to leave. They almost feel like they have, part of it could be a co-working space, something that you could either have a membership for or maybe contract out by the hour. There's like so much stuff in there that's like you don't want to leave.
It's like how ING has the coffee shops.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. And then they have ongoing training. They might be doing a seminar on something that you could sign up for. You drop in because you didn't know it was happening. And it's like, when was the last time you, A, physically went to the bank, but B, once you're there, not being so much of a hurry where you don't want to leave.
Yeah,
so.
It's like, do you do what's expected or do you go to that next level and whatever that is?
Yeah. Yeah. And like I tell the world, you know, difficult's good. If it's difficult for you, it's difficult for your competitors.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I love that you've said, I've seen you speak a couple times now, and I love that there's always a moment in it where you say you have to love your customers better than your competitors do.
Oh, absolutely.
And can you talk a little bit about like some experiences that you've had that have solidified that in your mind and some of the ways that you've been able to, in what you're currently doing and what you've done in the past and everything, how you've been able to live that.
Well, see, here's the thing. Many times we think that everything has to be centered around just the purchase of the product. You know, where somebody's, you know, contemplating, where am I going to go to vacation? Do I go here or do I go there? You know, do I buy blue or do I buy black? Now that's very purchase focused, and of course brands should be all over that. But when you truly are part of a customer's life and you're able to share and be part of it through social and digital, either following them on Pinterest, seeing where they're traveling, seeing what they're talking about, commenting on their blog, I would look for situations where customers needed help. And not necessarily help when dealing with me as a brand. So one of the things that I always believed in was treat your customers like friends. So when a friend is in need and you're able to help them, you're going to be there for them. So one of the biggest examples I've always shared was when a customer of ours was running the Chicago Marathon. It's a Sunday morning at 8:26 in the morning, and he tweets out a photo that he's missing an earbud. He says, my worst nightmare, 26.2 miles of only one earbud. Wish me luck. So, you know, he does get visual in Twitter sympathy. But knowing where the route was going, I said, wait a minute. The route is going to pass one of my stores twice. It's 8:26 in the morning. And I just said, wow, I think that we could really help him. How? Just have one of my employees go over to a pharmacy, buy the best sports type headphone set, get a poster board with his name, and go stand out in the middle of the marathon. Now, it was easier said than done, and people thought I was crazy, but got an orange poster board, and I tweeted them out. Hey, look for your name as you run past Domino's. And we had like a 30-minute plus or minus window of when he would be running by. And when he ran by, you know, we had the headphones for him. So it totally made a difference to him, to his race, and how much he shared that. But when you emotionally and truly engage with somebody at that level, for me, it was really important, because the thing is that this was Domino's Pizza in Chicago. And when people would openly say, I just ordered from Domino's, I have Domino's Pizza on the way, oh my God, you're going to be questioned by friends and family. And they're going to say, seriously, dude, you like live in Chicago and you're not only ordering Domino's, but you're kind of bragging about it. I wanted to make sure that they had digital bullets where they can tell people, yes. And the reason that I order from Domino's is because Ramon and his team, or so-and-so down at the store, or somebody, that they had a specific reason where somebody could say, I guess you're right. Where else could you order via Twitter from an airplane? So it's just those times. It's managing those micro interactions. You know, we focus. Yes, I mean, you know, the big picture and the goal and all of that is extremely important. But these micro interactions that brands and solution providers overlook are nothing but opportunities for those to pay attention.
I mean, it's 2014. We're about to hit 2015. You've been doing the digital thing, the customer service, the wowing people since forever in your career. And if we look at social, you've been doing it at least since social started, and maybe a little bit before. And it's still very difficult to convince prospects and clients that this stuff has value. I mean, I was on a call the other day, and I still have people who are saying, oh, we don't need to put out the twits on the tweeters or whatever you call that thing. And I'm like, really? Are we still at that point where you don't see the value in being able to listen and appreciate people and be able to provide them with experiences? Aside from your amazing stories and the things that have worked for you and how it's obviously paid off, how do you talk to people and outside of the you know, when you're up on stage and you give your presentations, I mean, everybody leaves jazzed because you put everything into it. I mean, you put everything in and everybody leaves inspired. But when you're having just a one-to-one conversation with that skeptic, and you've been doing this all this time and it works, and they don't see the value in it, how do you communicate that? Like, how do you get it through to them quickly and efficiently so that they can see it?
You have to bring it down to real-world examples that they're going to be able to connect with. So let's just take average customer, average type store, okay, if there is even such a thing. Something where there's a queue. So you're in line to pay. Doesn't matter if it's a grocery store, Target, Walmart, anything with the mart at the end. And the customer in front of you has a problem. They are either returning an item, or they have to do a price check, or it's scanned $9.99, but on the board it says $7.99, or they have an online price match that they have to do. You can't help yourself but be curious and nosy to just listen. No matter if me and you are talking, we're listening to what's going on between the cashier and that customer. And especially if it gets heated, where it says, well, I don't care. The price over there says $5.99. Yes, but it says that the sale ended last week, Tuesday. It's not my fault that you didn't take the price. I mean, when it gets that, everybody's eyes and attention is on that. So many times what I do is when I talk to people about scenarios like that, I try and get them to realize in real world, in brick and mortar, in life, our curiosity is just incredible, where we just want to know what we don't know. And we will pay attention to that. Because the reality is the majority of your customers don't want to talk to you. I mean, if you got a million followers on whatever, they don't want to talk to you. But what they do want is they want to see how you talk to others. Are you kind? Do you truly care about them? Because the day that they are in that person's shoes at the register, how will I be treated? What do I have to look forward to? And sometimes what I do is I'll paint scenarios like that and then make the parallel with social and digital and say, what's the difference when someone is going back and forth with a brand on social with regards to an issue that they're having versus being in the store? It's just scale. Whoever's in line and in store at that moment is going to see and hear what's going on. And if you're totally great and awesome at what you do, people are going to leave that place of business saying, wow, man, look what they did for that customer. Because in essence, as a business, you never want to let a problem leave your building, ever. It doesn't matter if you're at home, you know, the spouses, the kids, the whatever, you never want to let a problem leave the door. So social allows you to keep a grip on the conversation and to keep a grasp on the situation and being able to handle it before it becomes, I don't want to say unmanageable, but now it's going to cost you more to be able to take care of it. Another example is I was hired to speak at a country in Europe, and this brand has 32 brands. So each CEO of those 32 brands was there, and then the managing CEO of the brand for the country. So basically 33 CEOs in a room. And when the agency brings me in to talk about e-commerce, and I look for their profiles on LinkedIn, on social, and the only thing I can basically find are just corporate press releases of when they were promoted from SVP to CEO, and or they just hired the CEO from another brand and he's now working here. So I'm thinking, wow, how am I going to talk to them and make them connect with regards to e-commerce and the connection and the value that social can play in e-commerce? Because, you know, what's happening in Chicago and what we do is one thing, but here we're talking a different country in Europe. So I had to paint the picture with regards of how social can help them personally. You know, asking them, does anyone here have grandkids? You know, does anyone here have a busy schedule? And, you know, the answers to that are yes. And then, okay, so, I mean, your grandkids, I'm sure you absolutely love them more than life themselves. Do you have a picture of them? And then a couple of people said, yes, actually, I wanted to say, wow, it's so cool. You know, you have a picture of your grandkid in your wallet. That's a dying thing, but that's incredible. And the majority of them said, yes, you know, I have it here on my BlackBerry or whatever device they had. So then painting the picture of the emotion and the connection. So it says, so whenever you want to get up to date on how your grandchild is doing, because, you know, you're traveling, you might not be able to go to their soccer game or see a performance that they're doing at school. You can rely on your device and then asking them, so where do you see some of this? Well, you know, they'll send it to me, or it's on Flickr, or it's on, you know, the family has a website or something. Then making those parallels to business. So what happens when businesses can have this same type of connection and emotion, you know, with a brand, and they want to know what's going on? Where are they going to reach for that information? On their device. But what happens if you're not there? And what happens if these missed opportunities? And, you know, then I start painting the picture of those two parallels. So a lot of times I think you have to come at potential clients from although the statistics are very important with regards to, you know, how many people are connected and e-commerce, where it's going and all of that great stuff. But what's old is new. You just need to figure out how to make parallels between what they grew up with, what they believe in, and where we're at and where it's headed.
Yeah, one of the ways that I typically try and move people along is say, okay, in 1995, you're looking for a plumber. What do you use? How do you find them? Everybody, every single time I've ever asked it, Yellow Pages. Everybody says it. Know why? Because that's what everybody did. 2005, yeah. You're looking for a plumber. Where do you go? Everybody, every single time. I go to the internet. I go to Google. Cool. That's 10 years of behavior. An entire industry changed in how we behaved and found things. Okay, now it's going to be 2015. How do you think you find plumbers? Yeah, sure, Google still is an option. Sure, there's still Yellow Pages floating around. But would you ever think to just ask somebody, maybe using, yeah, like going on Facebook and saying, hey, does anybody know a good plumber? You have a, you know, there's a huge Facebook group in the Philadelphia area. It's out in the main line called the Lower Merion Community Network. And people go in there to find out about everything. You know, they're looking for a tutor. They're looking for, you know, a plumber. They're looking for a dry cleaner, whatever. And they go to this place. So that's how I try and bring them along with it. It's one of the ways I do it.
I like that scenario.
Yeah. So the next thing I wanted to ask you about was, you know, you're in this and you talk with a lot of different organizations, and you kind of have your finger on the pulse from talking with both social media people and people like this room full of CEOs in Europe who have absolutely no presence. So you're really seeing the gamut of things. Where do you see us right now in the development, I guess, of a more social marketplace, a more social business environment. I mean, from my perspective, I see that adoption has come a long way, but it still feels like on the personal side, we've adopted it. But on the business side, there are still a number of businesses that are either sitting on the sidelines or doing a very poor job or just, not really committing the effort to it. Where do you see us right now? And do you see that in the next couple of years, we're going to have any sort of mass adoption? Like people are just going to finally, the light bulb's going to go off. Like what are you seeing and what your experience is like?
Well, the reality is that it's a little cliche by saying that the customer's in the driver's seat. And the reason the customer's in the driver's seat, again, it goes back to this. You know, we no longer have to look for the yellow pages that are missing. And even if our friend is not in front of us, that device right there is what gives us the power, and the power is going to go back to the people. And the thing is that just like any massive change, just like any revolution, just like anything massive that has happened in history, that is what's going to bring people to the reality and say, wow, we need to do something and we need to change. So just like Amazon in 97 went public, but because they said, hey, what? I think people would want to order a book online instead of going into a brick and mortar business. That's what's going to happen. You know, brands that are really going to make a difference are going to pay attention to what people are doing. And when you figure out what people are doing, and then the brands that they themselves are doing something that is of extreme value, you're going to be able to connect the dots. Because as people, we want to be part of something bigger than us. That's why religions exist. That's why, you know, there's sports fanatics. That's why there's cults. That's why there's all of these, you know, big groups and big things that we want to be part of something. And brands are going to need to figure out, because people now have the power in their hands of mobile, of information, and of data, find the people that want to be part of what you're doing. And really, brands are going to need to pull down the shades a little bit, open up the heart, and let people know why they do what they do. Yes, back in the day, you know, we made pizza because I wanted to feed the hungry. But when you open it up and say, the reason that I'm doing this is that I want to provide employment and jobs for the community. I want to help mentor people where they themselves could potentially be an entrepreneur. I want to be an asset for students while they're in school so they can learn some of the importances of social and digital with regards to stuff that they're not being taught in school. I want to be there to help mentor students as they enter the business world. See, now it's two different things. One thing is making pizza and, you know, and feeding the hungry. But when I opened up and I let people know why I was truly doing what I was with regards to digital. So brands are eventually going to figure that out. And look at some brands today that are making changes because they have to. IBM is a really good example. You know, sometimes I even look at deluxe checks. You know, when was the last time you wrote a check? And you start looking at how they're developing and changing their business plans. And those that are paying attention are going to be able to do that. Otherwise, you're just going to be a case study and say, this was a brand that once existed.
Yeah, like Kodak.
Ha!
Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah, you look at today. What does Kodak sell? What do they do? I mean, they owned the cameras. Sony owned Walkman. Sony had us listening to music in this before that came along.
Yep, absolutely. Ramon, you are just always a pleasure to talk to. I mean, I love your energy. I love your enthusiasm. And the stories that you tell and the way that you communicate your points is just so real. And I just really appreciate that you can make things so relatable, because I feel like there's a lot of fear out there about it, and you're really walking the walk and showing people how to do it right. So I really appreciate you coming on the podcast today. I know it was tough for us to get this scheduled. I hope it's not too long before we see each other again and get to hang out, maybe go to a conference together. But I appreciate you setting aside the time. I think this is going to be really valuable for people who just don't really get how to care about their customers the right way or how they can use digital to make that a little bit easier. So thanks for coming on. One last thing before you go, tell people where they can go and be social with you, learn a little bit more about you and just follow what you're up to.
You know, I always tell people, just simply hashtag your favorite social platform with Ramon Wow and I'm there.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. Everybody, thanks for listening. This has been Jeff Gibbard with Ramon De Leon. Ramon Wow. Hashtag thanks. Out.
Out of here.
Thanks again for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed that episode of Conversations. Be sure to go over to iTunes or Stitcher and give us a rating. Tell us what you love about the show, what you hate about the show. And we hope you come back for our next episode. Take care.